You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. It's Championship Monday. We've got a rematch, the first ever college football championship rematch in the modern era. And we're going to be all over. We're breaking it down. Steve Merrill is going to be joining us. Emery Hunt will be joining us. Jason Braddock will join us. And it's a good thing Braddock joins us because he's a lifelong Clemson Tiger fan, as well as he covers the Houston Texans, who are getting 15 points against the New England Patriots. It's rematch city, man, this week. Across the board, it's rematches. Seattle and Atlanta. A rematch. Remember, Julio Jones was pass interfered with by Richard Sherman late in that football game, but the Falcons did blow a lead. It wasn't all on the referees, but nevertheless, that's a rematch. We have a rematch of the Patriots and the Texans. The Texans got shut down, man, and shut out. An embarrassing performance by the Texans. That's why they're getting 15 here. They lost to Jacoby Brissett, man, 27-0. That's a rematch. Across the board, Green Bay Packers, they played the Dallas Cowboys. That's when people started to buy in the Dak a little bit right there. So we got a lot of NFL football to be breaking down on the program here. And, oh, yeah, we got the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Kansas City Chiefs rematch. So we got rematches across the board. I can't recall this, actually. We're going to take a look at the advanced NFL lines. We'll see where they go throughout the week. Obviously, the Jordy Nelson situation is something to keep our eye on. I got a lock, though, actually. I'll give you an early pick. I promise you that out of all the teams that are playing this week, no one will be going on any boat rides today. I'm just saying. Yeah, I'm just saying. All right, but nevertheless, so, yeah, we're all about the college championship football game this evening, and I hope it's more entertaining than the NFL has been, because the NFL playoff game's a lot like the regular season, boring, except with more commercials. That's the NFL playoffs in a nutshell, but hard to argue right now. Hard to argue with the Elite Eight that we have left standing in the National Football League. The wild card always just sort of separates and gets rid of the pretenders. Bye-bye, Miami. Bye-bye, Detroit. You know, the Lions did even worse than we thought they were actually going to do. But nevertheless, let's get down to business so we can spend as much time as possible talking about tonight's National Championship football game. But the 2016 National Football League regular season might be done. The playoffs are here. I'll tell you what's not done. Who ruined your Sunday or maybe Saturday? For those of you that paid attention and watched our weekly pick segment on Friday, we told you. We did pretty well, actually. You know, the Houston Texans, that was free money, man. That was free money. We can look back on it right now and wish that we hammered it harder than we did. But that was a gift from Lord Gambler to get the weekend started. And the Houston Texans took care of business. Now, you guys know, I generally don't bet unders. Well, of course, because I'm a stupid moron, I took the under of this football game. And it just creeps over the number. And I swear to God, it's always the games that you don't expect to be points. That's where there's points. We saw that in the bowl games. You know, we all thought, what's going to be the lowest scoring game of the weekend? Oh, that Houston-Oakland game. What's going to be the second lowest scoring game? Oh, man, they're playing it. It's Lambeau, Giants defense, two highest scoring games. The two games that went over the number? Yeah, the games that weren't supposed to. We all thought there'd be points in a Miami-Pittsburgh game. There could have been more points, but nevertheless. So you know what? We hammered the Texans. We lost a little bit on the under. It is what it is. We got to start, like we told you, we got to start taking less teasers and less crap and everything else. We got to start betting sides and totals all the time, too. So we grabbed a piece of the Seattle Seahawks. The line kept climbing. We weren't really put off by this. And it's against my nature to really want to take a favorite that's laying nearly double-digit points. But I knew that the Detroit Lions suck on the road in the playoffs. And history repeats itself all the time in the wild card, all right? So, but we lost a little bit of a teaser there. Not enough for me to say that my Saturday was ruined. All right, Sunday starts off. We love the Pittsburgh Steelers. Game goes according to game plan. Except we had a big piece of the over of this football game, so it sort of spoiled our Pittsburgh Steeler wins. Yet still, we still weren't really, like, outraged. Yeah, I can sort of blame myself. Am I going to blame Matt Moore? Matt Moore's a freaking warrior, man. The guy got leveled. He got back up. He took it in the chin. Unfortunately, he also turned the ball over a couple of times in a red zone. That's why the game stayed under the number. Yet, hey, it's a cold-ass world. I'm not blaming anybody. But we do have the blame game to play, starting with the New York Giants. And, you know, I swear, next to Andy Dalton, I don't know if there's a quarterback, you know, besides Eli Manning that I dislike as much. There's just something about his, he's just a doofus. Like, what's the best way of, like, you know, describing? Like, Eli's the type of guy that, like, he's that dude that's got the ultra-hot chick, and you're like, I don't know, man, like, I don't know how this guy does it. Like, he's an idiot. You know, he's like Cletus. You know what I mean? Hey, you know, he's like Cletus, the slack-jaw yokel. And somehow, you know, living in the big city. He is the capital city freaking goofball, all right? He is at that, you know, really. You know, listen, guys, I know that who ruined your Sunday. You guys are looking for A-list material here. I've already ripped the crap out of all these players all year long already, all right? But I'm thinking about Eli Manning, and I'm just thinking, you know what? You're just a capital city freaking goofball. You know, you're just a dumbass. And I love the fact that he's always, like, shocked and confused after. Like, you know, why don't you just ever, like, look like you're upset as opposed to, the, like, looking around like someone stole your milk in the cafeteria? Like, yeah. But we're going to get back to Eli. Because Eli actually, you know, Eli was throwing the ball on a dime to start off the football game. Yet, unfortunately, the New York Giant wide receivers who decided to go on a boat trip, Now, I wasn't going to make a lot out of the boat trip. I don't really, you know, whatever, man. I'm aware that most of today's athletes are pretty self-centered, narcissistic, and about themselves and about Instagram and about banging a Kardashian than they are about actually winning a damn playoff game. I already know that, all right? I already know that. And it's like my boy Nick Lewis, you know, tweeted out. Longtime Montreal Alouette Calgary Stampeder CFL legend stated about Odell Beckham. You know, being great doesn't mean you caught a ball with one hand. Being great means consistently catching footballs, all right? Odell Beckham couldn't have caught an STD if he had sex without a condom with every damn Kardashian yesterday, all right? These guys couldn't have caught an STD in a Mexican whorehouse. Like, you guys want to go boating? How about you make a damn catch? How about you catch a freaking football? Would that be asking too much? You guys are running around. Yo, we're young savages. You're running around before the football game without your shirt on. Oh, yeah, you're real cool. Wow, I'm impressed, Odell. I love your tattoos. You're really a badass. You know what? That's going to look great on Snapchat. You know what's funny? I don't know what Devontae Adams looks like without a shirt on. I don't want to know what Devontae Adams looks like without a shirt on. I know what Devontae Adams looks like in a jersey. I saw Devontae Adams out there making freaking plays. I didn't see him running around the pregame making a jackass of himself. You guys go on boat tours. You run around like a bunch of clouds before the game, and you can't catch a damn football. Go ahead, Odell. Yeah, good for you, Odell. You punched a hole in the wall. It looked like a pretty ass wuss punch, to be honest with you, too. You know, like, really? Odell, he really showed that wall. Wow. Where do you even start, too? The only guy that showed up was Tavares King, of all people. Who had him in their DraftKings lineup? Tavares King shows up. You got footballs bouncing around. The Giants are la-di-da-di-da-di-da-da-da. Here's my impression of Coach McAdoo. God, did you even see what was going on the damn field, Coach? You know, McCarthy got criticized for going for it on his 40. At least McCarthy is showing his guys, I believe in you and we're going to win. You know, you got McAdoo and his $2 haircut. You guys, freaking, you know, he's punting from the 30. Let's punt from the Packers, 38. Two plays later, hey, we're back in the 38. Great call, Coach. You ruined my Sunday. And, you know, not just you, McAdoo. Odell, Shepard, you're all a bunch of clowns. Put that on Instagram. Oh. Clowns! You're a bunch of punk-ass clowns. I don't know. You know, you guys didn't lose the game because these guys went on a boat trip, all right? But it did expose them for being unprepared And even the great New York Giants can only last so long. You ruined my Sunday. Thank God they're gone. You know what? Why don't you all go? Go all on a boat tour and stay out there, all right? Stay out there. I hope you get, like, kidnapped by Somalian pirates. Screw you, New York Giants. You ruined my Sunday. Game time decision continues. All right, game time decisions continues. I apologize if I offended any Somalian pirates by referencing you guys with the clowns that are the New York Giants. All right, it was funny. I was like, you know, I won't be too crazy today. You know, I was like, man, you know, I'm pretty much like, what more can I call these guys at this point in time? Eli screwed me a lot this year somehow. For a team that covered a lot, like, man, they somehow screwed me a lot. Like, there's just Eli's face. Like, let's just be honest. There's a couple of athletes out there. They just have that look that you want to strangle them, man. Jay Cutler, Eli Manning, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Andy Dalton sucks, but I don't hate Andy Dalton. I want to like Andy Dalton. Like, Eli is just, like I said, he's like the guy in The Simpsons. He's Cletus the Slackjaw Yokel. You know, but somehow he's rich. Drives me crazy, man. All right, So nevertheless, so Jason Braddock's going to join us. Emery Hunt's going to just bring in Steve Merrill right now, who I think shares some of my frustration. Look how happy Steve looks. What's up, Steve?
I'm so happy, Gabe. See the big smile.
So, you know, I open up every Monday. You follow it with Who Ruined Your Sunday. I brought up the over of the Dolphins game. I was like, Matt Moore nearly got decapitated and he kept playing, so I wasn't really going to rip him too hard yet. The turnovers were a killer, man. Every time it was like at the end, I'm like, oh, man, I think they can score here, actually. They get down to the 7-yard line or whatever it is. It just, they hit the wall. And then the New York Giants. And, you know, you lose the last bet of the weekend, Steve. It doesn't even matter what happened earlier. You know, it's just, the whole thing's been a nightmare, man.
No, it doesn't matter what happened earlier. I had North Carolina as my one basketball play yesterday. They win by over 50 points, cover by over 30. At the same time, the Dolphins are playing. And then I watched the Dolphins fumble at the end of the first half or not score late. Either one of those touchdowns inside the 20 or 30 gives us the over. And then, of course, the Giant game was just icing on the cake. One of the most misleading blowout losses in playoff history. I mean, the Giants dominated the first half, couldn't put the ball in the end zone. And then that random Hail Mary at the end of the half changed the entire outlook for the second half.
Yeah, you know what? I knew they were going to it was you knew they were going to score on that Hail Mary. As soon as he threw it, I'm like, here it comes. Here it comes. I had a teaser, Steve, so I was just like, man, I just need to stay within 11.5 points of this football game. And when they made it 14-12, I don't know why the hell they didn't go for 2 points. If there's ever a time you go for two, you know, I don't know about you, Steve, but the book, I don't need a book to tell me if we go for two, we tie the game. Like, you know, midway through the third quarter of a playoff game, I think it's time to go for two, coach. Like, it was just, you know, McAdoo the whole time. The guy's looking at his charts. Coach, like, there's a game going on out there.
What's interesting about that, Gabe, is I've said for decades now, back in the 90s and 2000s, I always said that you really should never go for two unless it's like mid-fourth quarter and it's literally going to be like a scoreless game because there's too much scoring that can still take place. However, things change now with the NFL because it's almost 50-50 long-term expectation now with the longer extra point. It goes from like 99% now to only about 94%. Two-point conversions are about 47%, so you're getting double the return on that 47. So it's really a 50-50 flip long-term. So I think in that situation, you should go for two more often, especially since you can tie the game.
All right, so it was a gutless performance by the Giants all around. We'll move on. One thing, Steve, listen, they went on a boat trip. People are going to make a big deal about it. It makes for good fodder. But, you know, that cost them a game. I can tell you the guys who were on the boat didn't catch a damn thing all night. And secondly, I can tell you, Steve, out of the players, you know, the teams that are left playing in the NFL, I doubt anyone's going on Miami on a cruise today.
Yeah, and I would think the Cowboys might be relieved they're not playing the Giants. You know, the only team to beat them this season other than that meaningless game in Week 17.
Yeah, but now they get the Packers, though. So
and what's interesting about Dallas is, of course, they'd already clinched the number one seed before that Monday night game against Detroit. So, you know, you're talking about the guys taking time off versus not taking time off. They played everybody in that Detroit game. Then they took week 17 off. I think it's the right move. I'm not sure I wouldn't have sacked guys in week 16 as well. And then again, you get the extra bye, so it's a tough call. I thought the future odds were interesting. One sports book right now has both Green Bay and Pittsburgh as the third and fourth favorites ahead of both Kansas City and Atlanta, the number two seeds. So it shows that those are the dangerous wildcard teams remaining.
All right, so the favorites went 4-0 straight up and against the spread. The totals were 2-2. Let's do a quick line check, and we'll get to tonight's championship game. Seahawks at Falcons, first game up. Falcons now 4.5-point favorites. It's amazing, Steve. Every game's a rematch. Every game's a rematch this year. Played week 6, Hawks won 26-24. They got away with a blatant pass interference. Dan Quinn, former defensive coordinator of the Seahawks, takes on Pete Carroll in this spot. I like the Falcons, but I'm surprised it's 4.5.
It's amazing all these non-divisional games or rematches. We had a couple this past weekend as well. Steelers, Dolphins had played. Texans, Raiders had played.
Yep.
And what's incredible about that is, you know, normally one of those teams obviously has to win. So the fact they all can make the playoffs still with one of them beating each other in the regular season in non-divisional games is pretty incredible. So it gives us a lot of data to look at. One thing that jumps out at me about the two NFC games, they both have very high totals, around 51.5, 52. Of the two, though, you feel like that Dallas-Green Bay game could be the shootout. Obviously, Atlanta puts up a ton of points, doesn't necessarily stop anybody. Just that X factor with Seattle. They've been such a subpar team on the road this year. You get the feeling in the good conditions in the dome, though, they should be able to score as well.
Yeah, they should be. Atlanta's defense has played better down the stretch. I think their defense is better than the numbers indicate. But Atlanta does have a hard time stopping the run. I think they're ranked 28th, 29th against the run. Could be a little bit of a problem for them. Yet I think this Falcon team is different. I don't see a collapse coming. I think the Falcons can get this thing done, and then they can subsequently win the following week as well. Texans and Pats, you mentioned it. Interesting here, Steve. The number open at 16, which is incredibly high. I mean, you don't get playoff numbers like this. It was the biggest playoff number in years since like 2008 or 9 or something like that. But it's come down, back down to 15 right now. That Texans defense is real good. Brock Osweiler did beat Tom Brady last year, but that was at Mile High as a member of the Denver Broncos, getting 15 points here. Pats won 27-0 earlier.
And the thing is, you know, the Patriots are going to have to play next week in the title game. It's not like they have a week off before the Super Bowl. So if they're up by 17 points late, do they necessarily need to pile it on? Probably not. Problem with Houston, though, is they have no backdoor cover potential. This is a terrible offense. They average only 1.5 touchdowns per game. It's the lowest touchdown per game average in nearly 80 years in NFL playoff history for a playoff team. Since like the 1930s, Giants was the last one to be worse. So this is not a team that you want to be hoping just stays within the number. It's a big number, but for good reason. I'd be shocked if Houston wins the game.
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve. Like we saw earlier this year, 27-0. Houston historically have rolled over, too. We saw that last year in the playoffs. They got shut out. They got a gift handed to them with the Raiders. Yeah, you're right. It's they can't backdoor. That's the problem. All right, we'll pick up the pace. Steelers and Chiefs, real fun game. Packers and Cowboys, another rematch played in week 4. Pittsburgh drilled them 43-14. Big Ben was seen in a boot after the game.
Yeah, and also this is the one game this week where the home team's not at least a 4-point favorite. So basically this is the one game this week in which the oddsmakers are saying the road team, Pittsburgh, is the better overall team because home field with the bye is worth almost 4 points historically. Kansas City's a tough team for me to handicap. They burnt me a few times. They burnt me in that Sunday night game at Denver a few months ago on Thanksgiving weekend, thoroughly outplayed by the Broncos but won in late overtime. They burnt me against Atlanta on the road. They ran back the block 2 to win that game. I still feel like Kansas City a bit of a phony team, but defensively they're pretty good, and Pittsburgh is a suspect defense. Miami didn't exploit that yesterday, but most of the teams over the past month have.
Packers and Cowboys, that's going to be the game everyone's talking about all week. I don't know, man. It's going to be tough for Dak Prescott to beat Aaron Rodgers twice in the same season, Steve, in my opinion. But I want to keep my eye on the Jordy Nelson situation. Without Jordy, it could be a big problem for them.
Yeah, like I said earlier, this seems like the one game that should be the shootout. You know, Dallas is still suspect on defense despite the strong record this year. I think of that Thanksgiving Day game when the Redskins put up over 500 yards on the road. Green Bay is obviously weak on defense. Giants just didn't put it in the end zone the first half yesterday. Nelson being gone, though, does concern you, but that Packer offense is rolling otherwise. I think they've scored 30-plus now in 5 or 6 straight games.
Yeah, I'm always worried. I know that historically teams on the bye have done well. But the Cowboys haven't been in this situation before. Like, right. Young guys. You got a smoking team in Green Bay that's, what, seven in a row right now, talking about peaking at the right time. Weather's not going to be a factor. Aaron Rodgers making plays. I'm intrigued by the 4 points in that game. All right, well, we'll break it down later in the week. I just want to do an opening line check for the wild card games. Leads us into the championship game tonight, Steve. Should be a classic, man. I mean, last year was a classic. It was the first time ever we have a rematch. You know, we can't argue. We can always argue in college football about this and about that. And this poll sucked, and this committee doesn't know what they're doing, and this team got screwed. But ultimately, Steve, we have the two best teams in college football playing again.
And just like last year, both semifinal games were terrible, and the national title game last year was great. So let's maybe hope we get the same thing this year. Last year, the line closed 6, 6.5. That's exactly where it's going to probably close again this year. It's currently 6.5, Alabama. But the public is on Clemson, Gabe. One thing that's interesting about this game, a month ago, when the initial matchups were announced in mid-December, the look-ahead line on this possible matchup was Alabama minus 12. Last week on that New Year's Eve before the games kicked off, the bettable line was Bama minus 8.5. CG Technologies in Vegas even opened at minus 8, and now it's 6, 6.5. So the public is on Clemson here. The over-under a bit more split, a little bit to the over. We've seen it go from 50.5 back to that key number of 51 today. But keep in mind, the public normally is heavily on the over, so the fact that they're split is a little unusual as well. Those low-scoring games last week obviously plays a part in that.
It's only the second time this year Alabama have been single-digit favorites. The other time was on the road against the LSU Tigers. They won the game 10-0. And it's funny, last night I was watching the ESPN preview show, and they had some Alabama guys on. They were talking about it, and you're right, Steve. Danny Cannell, Joey Galloway, I think McShay, they were all on Clemson's bandwagon, basically, leading into this game, which worries me a little bit, too. But Alabama are using this as bulletin board material. The kids at Alabama did interviews yesterday and were talking about how they know they're the big underdogs and nobody believes in them. And, you know, no one thinks we're going to win. And Galloway said, I like what he said. He's like, hey, kids, you're 7-point favorites, all right? Yeah, no one's buying this. But Alabama, they've watched this, and you're right. They've seen a lot of so-called experts, and they know it seems to be a vibe out there that Clemson's going to get them this year, and they're trying to feed off of this, and they're trying to tell themselves they're underdogs.
Yeah, and you look at last year's game, Clemson probably should have won. They had a 31-18 first down edge. They outgained them 550-473, outrushed and outpassed them, yet lost the game by 5. So it's a rare situation where the defending champs, number one undefeated, actually feel like they have something to play for here. I don't think they're going to be complacent at all. And this could be one of those trap games we always talk about. When the public lines up on the dog, it makes you nervous. Other thing I think is interesting here too, Gabe, is it's hard not to like the under after those dominating semifinal games. But this game was a shootout last year. 85 points over 1,000 total yards. And as you know, we talk about this in the Super Bowl all the time. Big games always have more garbage points than other games. And for some reason, the floodgates normally open, especially in the second half. And that's why that 50.5, 51 really is a low total for a championship game.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I don't think we're going to get to 85 like last year. But but I could see this getting into to 57, 58, 60 range.
These teams each scored the total almost last year, 45-40. That's what's crazy about it.
I know. And are they suddenly – I get it. They both know what they're going to be doing a little bit. You could say it's a little bit of an advantage for Bama in the sense that it's Deshaun Watson and the same offense essentially. Meanwhile, it's a new offense. We haven't talked about the Lane Kiffin situation. You know, Steve, you look at the defenses, though. Alabama, number one ranked defense in the NCAA as far as points per game at 11 points. Number top ranked defense against the rush. 12th ranked against the pass. Clemson are the 7th overall ranked defense. They only give up 17 points a game. And you could argue they played against better offenses in the ACC. 16th ranked against the pass. 19th ranked against the run. Man, that's a lot of serious defensive juice on the field there.
Yeah, the one thing to the X factor here again is Deshaun Watson. It's very rare that you could say the underdog, at least from the point spread perspective, has the better quarterback. You know, and that was a factor last year as well. Bama never really has great quarterbacks. On paper, these two defenses are stifling, especially Bama's. It's hard not to like the under. 11 points per game, less than 4 yards per play. But then look at the two offenses. They each average exactly 39.5 points per game.
Exactly.
You know, so right there, that's the quandary. And the mobile quarterback concerns me. You know, that's what got him last year, and Bama doesn't see a lot of that. And I think that's the real X factor with only a week to prepare for Watson, someone that's very difficult to simulate in practice.
No, I agree. They both put up 39 points a game. And they're both going to get into the 20s and 30s type of deal. There's going to be points. We haven't even mentioned Alabama. I was looking at one book. They didn't have it. Will there be a defensive or special teams touchdown scored? Right. Alabama scores one every game. So, you know, there's going to be points. Deshaun Watson, you mentioned it. You got the mobile quarterback situation. That's always sort of been the kryptonite for Nick Saban. But without being stated, the 17 interceptions are a problem for Deshaun Watson. You know, even threw two picks against Ohio State. They got away with it. But he's not going to get away with it. He turned the ball over once last year only. You know, but you mentioned that game too, Steve. Derrick Henry rushed for three touchdowns. So is Bo Scarborough going to replace that? Secondly, you mentioned it. There were three lead changes. There were four lead changes and three ties in a game. Kenyon Drake popped a kickoff return, actually, that swung the tie quickly. I almost look at this like Ohio State. I know Alabama, you know, they're more diverse, and I'm not comparing their offenses, but Jalen Hurts is 18 years old. He's not a great pocket passer. I'm looking at Clemson with the same game plan. If they can just slow down that ground attack, get some points up on the board, and force Jalen Hurts to throw the football, they'll have Alabama where they want him.
By the way, Gabe, I did see one book has all offensive touchdowns minus 150, no plus 120, which is unbelievably low number for a non-offensive touchdown. Normally that's around the 180, 200 range in the Super Bowls. So it's tough to play that, even though Bama did it again in the semifinal game.
Yeah, normally you're getting plus money.
Oh, yeah, getting more than plus 120, exactly. Here's my question. Does a kickoff return count as a non-offensive score? I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it does. So you're getting a little bit more than just a defensive score there. That might be why the line's lower. One thing I'll point out about the rematch being similar, if that's the case, a little bit of a sleeper for some props might be Hunter Renfrow. His over-under receptions is 2.5. He scored the first two touchdowns for Clemson last year, and he had 7 receptions, led the team. And he did that in the season after only having 33 receptions and 5 touchdowns. This year, 34 receptions, 4 touchdowns. Be very interesting to see if he breaks out again or if Bama maybe has him on the radar this year.
I like where you're going with that. Only 2.5. I'll be taking a look at that because you're right. They're going to be so focused in on Mike Williams. Someone else is going to have to step up. I like that. Was it Fuller? The kid made a nice catch out of the backfield last week. You know, Gallman's going to be all right, but you're right. Between Renfrow and McLeod, someone's going to have to step up and make plays. I'm going to be taking a look at that prop. I'm going over 4 sacks, Steve. We got to get out of here. I know both quarterbacks are mobile, et cetera, but Alabama have 51 sacks on the season. Clemson have like 49. They're both top 5 ranked sacks. They're going to – 4 sacks is not a lot of sacks in a game of this magnitude.
Plus, if they're trying to run and they're behind the line of scrimmage, it's still a sack, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Love that college football rule. You're right, Steve. And if you're betting rushing props for the quarterback, they lost those count. In the NFL, it doesn't count. Those count.
Yeah, it goes against the passing yard of the NFL, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. Check him out, prosportsinfo.com, one of the coverage experts. We're going to continue talking the college football championship. We'll get another perspective. Emery Hunt joins me next. Game time decisions. We are live on the Fantasy Sports Network. I am Gabriel Morenci. The show replays at 5:30 on the television networks. It replays at 5 o'clock on the radio networks. Download the Fantasy Sports Network radio app. You get the programming 24/7 wherever you go on demand. It's great stuff. So do that right now, or at least right after the show, all right? Jason Brad is going to join us from Houston, Texas in a couple of minutes. We'll take a look at the Texans and the Patriots matchup, but it's all symmetry today on the program because Braddock is actually from South Carolina, is a big Clemson fan. So we'll talk about the championship game with Jason. Now we break it down with Emery Hunt. Get a different perspective than Steve Merrill's. Emery, it's always a pleasure. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing fine, man. Appreciate you having me on. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you as well, Emery, and happy National Championship game day. Last year we were treated to a real classic, and the term classic is tossed around too loosely, but last year it really, really was a classic. It was a back-and-forth game, man. Derrick Henry made plays, Drake the kickoff return, Deshaun Watson 4 touchdown passes. It was just a great, great game, and it's the first time ever we have a college football rematch. We see, we saw Emery this year in the NFL. Both Denver and Carolina couldn't even get back to the playoffs. It's freaking hard for football teams to get back to a championship game, win or lose. So impressive that both these teams did exactly just that.
Especially in college football, where you have a ton of moving parts around. You have guys graduating, at least 25 to 30 guys each year that are leaving the program. And in this game, you look at a situation where you have guys that didn't play last year that are big contributors to this team's success that are now healthy and on the field. So it should definitely make for an interesting game. And also coaches leave, too.
Yeah, coaches leave. Well, it's a good thing that Brent Venables hasn't left yet. And you know, you got to wonder, how come I never hear this guy's name as far as head coaching rumors are concerned? You look at what he's done with this defense, the shutout Urban Meyer for the first time ever. He's somebody that has been a lot of talk about the Lane Kiffin-Sarkisian dynamic this week. Not a lot of talk about the work that Venable's done, and you mentioned it. You know, he lost, people thought who were going to be his two best linemen at the time. Defense, they only given up 17 points a game, ranked in top 20, both against the rush and against the pass. And Clemson's defense, they gave up some points this year, Emery, but as you know, they're the type of defense, they make plays when they have to, and, you know, they've dialed it up over the last month or so as well.
Absolutely. And when you look at what they did last time out against Ohio State, which has an offense that's similar to what you're going to see tonight from Alabama, although Alabama has better perimeter players at receiver, you look at the same concepts that they run. And they were able to shut down Alabama. They were able to shut down Ohio State. And I think the quarterback situation for Alabama is similar to what you saw with JT Barrett,
yep.
A guy that you can hurt you on the ground, but not so much in the air. So I think what Brent Venables is looking toward in this matchup is, hey, if we could stop the run and make this a Jalen Hurts versus Deshaun Watson game, that heavily favors Clemson.
You know what? We're on the exact same page, and I just brought this up, and I was going to ask you just that, and I see similarities as well here with Jalen Hurts. Except Jalen Hurts is younger than JT Barrett, and he just lost his quarterback's coach. You know, that was his guy. He's been dealing on a daily basis with Kiffin. I'm not so concerned about the X's and O's and what plays are going to be dialed up, but just the logistics of it is just different. You get Jalen Hurts. He's only 18 years old. He's not a great pocket passer. And last year in the playoffs, one of the big things about Bama that impressed me the most, and a kid that no one really talks about now, he's forgotten. We always forget about the Bama quarterbacks, but was Jacob Coker. And I remember in this game, man, he was throwing bombs, dude. He was throwing bombs to Ridley, and he was throwing 45, 50-yard bombs down the field. We were like, wow, Coker's really, really playing his ass off tonight, and he's making throws. It took three touchdowns from Derrick Henry. I mentioned a 95-yard kickoff return from Kenyon Drake. They needed Coker throwing the ball down the field. They needed a lot of offensive juice last year to beat this Clemson team. I'm not so sure Jalen Hurts can get that juice flowing.
And you look at Clemson giving up that touchdown on the kickoff return. That's the biggest key. I think there's a stat out there that says Alabama has scored probably more defensive touchdowns, at least one per game, or non-offensive touchdowns per game.
Yeah, NCAA record now. I think it's up to 16 on the season, man.
Which is unheard of. So if you're Clemson, you know last year you got burned by a kickoff return touchdown. So you can't turn the ball over. You can't give up cheap points via special teams. And you're going to really have to force Jalen Hurts to beat you with his arm. And I think that's going to be the biggest game plan coming in. Washington had some opportunities. They dropped the interception early in that contest. Let's say they get that interception and the game is 14-3 or 10-3. We're talking about a different ball game probably, but you can't let those opportunities pass you up if you're Clemson, and you have to protect the football against Alabama.
Yeah, we saw that. You're right. And I thought with Alabama and Washington, to be honest with you, Emery, I thought that the Washington defense versus the Alabama offense was pretty much a wash. You know, those kids on Washington were battling, and they weren't getting pushed around too much in the trenches. Yeah, Scarborough popped a few, but those kids on Washington on defense have nothing to hang their heads about. They weren't the soft ones. You know, and I expected Browning to be a little bit overwhelmed by the moment, and he was. And the offense was overwhelmed, and Washington's O-line couldn't handle Bama. But Washington's defense battled Bama, and I think Clemson can do the same. And conversely, I know Deshaun Watson ain't going to be overwhelmed by the moment tonight. This guy has his eye on the prize, man. You know, some kids, you know, be thinking about the NFL and this and that, and this is just sort of part of it. No, no, man. Deshaun wants this as bad as anything, man. He's a real leader. This team, it feels like they're on such a mission, and they know what to expect from Bama tonight. I'm calling the upset. Who do you like?
I like Clemson in this game as well, and I think they are the better team, quite honestly. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. Their defense is excellent. And when you look at last year with Hunter Renfrow totally tearing up that Bama secondary, now you add in Mike Williams, Deion Kane, Jordan Leggett, the tight end as well. In addition to what you have in the backfield with Watson and also Gallman, I think Watson gave that team last year belief that they can win. Only a few guys on that football team last year probably thought they had a chance to beat Bama, Renfrow and Watson, and then later on Gallman. But now this team says, hey, we can beat this team. So now they have that confidence in conjunction with their talent facing a team that's probably one-dimensional offensively. I think it bodes well for Clemson's chances tonight, and I think they win.
Emory Hunt with us. Emory, it's always a pleasure, my man. We'll definitely talk again because I know you got as much passion for the game. You and my boy Joe Lisi, you guys will be all over the Shrine games, the East-West games, and all these other games that are coming up, man. So we'll be talking ball before this season's over again. Always a pleasure, man.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate that.
There's Emory Hunt with us, fbgameplan.com. Great website. We're going to continue talking football. We'll mix in some NFL football. We'll get Braddock's take on the national championship game. I think he's going to like Clemson tonight, too. Camera 2, Drew's getting worried right now because we're all a bunch of bozos, and we're all Clemson. Like Alabama's done something wrong or something. Oh, yeah. Alabama, they're only on a 26-game win streak. They're 14-0 this year, and they're 10-4 against the spread. And we all love Clemson. Yeah, we're geniuses. Jason Braddock joins us next. Game time decisions continues. KMBE, Houston, Texas. Jason Braddock steps up and in to kick it with us. We're going to talk some Houston Texans football, but we're also going to talk about the national championship game as well. For those of you that are like, man, a lot of college football, it's a national championship, guys, all right? It's the last game of the season. Tomorrow we'll be back on the NFL train and NFL all week. But we got to start paying attention to what's going on in the college basketball world because March Madness really isn't all that far off. Golf season set to begin. Mayo's going to be in fine form. Cam Stewart's all fired up for the start of golf. Marenzi, I got some golf picks for you on Wednesday. So there's a lot of stuff going on Fantasy Sports Network. Let's bring in Jason Braddock right now. Jason, let's start off with the Houston Texans first before we get to your Clemson Tigers. But you're going to be on the air tonight, man, for the first hour of this football game. A little bit happens to me all the time as a gambling man. I'm always distracted. Jason, welcome to my world.
Oh, yeah. It's going to make for some fun live reads. I'm sure the sponsors will love me chiming in the middle of doing a live read for them with a Clemson update. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun experience. We'll see how it goes. And I'm sure my mood of the show will change as the Clemson play goes.
Yeah, you know, he's like, you know what, you should just hope, though, that, like, the pregame's like 40 minutes or something, right? So you only really miss a few minutes, and then you can get out of there. But, you know, hell, I want to tune into your show right now, man, because I want to hear what's going on. But, you know, we talked about this last week with the Texans. They were in a no-win situation, in my opinion. If they beat the Raiders, everyone's like, oh, you should have beaten the Raiders. If they lost to the Raiders, then, you know, then Brock is just on the next Greyhound out of town, basically. They beat the Raiders, but now they go to New England. They're getting 15 points right now, Jason. I wonder if the Texan players are aware. They're 15-point underdogs.
Yeah, I'm sure they're aware of it. When that line opened, I felt like it was kind of high. I know a lot of people are probably going to jump on that side of it, and that's why Vegas feels they can put it up there to try to get people to go with the Texans side of it. But people are going to be so heavy on New England with this, mostly for Brock Osweiler, and because the Texans did lose to the Patriots. Again, when they had a third-string quarterback making his first start earlier this year. That being said, Being in that locker room after the Raiders win, I got a sense that they could surprise. And when I say surprise, let me make sure to state this. I think the Patriots win, but I think this is a closer game than what most of us are expecting. Now, the one exception to that is if Brock Osweiler goes out there and has a typical Brock Osweiler game where he throws two or three picks. That's very likely, especially against Bill Belichick in the playoffs. That being said, I think they're real conservative with Osweiler, play time control type of offense, and I think the Texans make this more entertaining than what most people are expecting.
You know, I remember Brock Osweiler playing well last year against Tom Brady and beating Tom Brady in a pretty big football game late last year, but not in the playoff game, but New England went there earlier in the year as well. Now, that was with the Denver Broncos, and it was, I think it was a Sunday nighter. It was a different situation, obviously, but even though Brock Osweiler's numbers are terrible and, you know, everyone's on the Brock, you know, Basha train here, if you're Brock Osweiler, you're thinking, you know what, I've beaten Brady before, I can do this. As you stated, I'm not calling an outright upset, but the Texans do have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the football. My concern is I don't think you can really play cautious. If they really play ultra-cautious, they're just going to lose by maybe they cover and they still lose type of deal. They're going to have to take some chances and try to throw the football with Brock. And he did make a couple of real nice throws on Saturday evening.
Yeah, he did. You mentioned Brock winning against Tom Brady when he was in Denver. I think Bill O'Brien, the one thing that gets Bill O'Brien in trouble, and maybe if you believe in all the rumors that's out there, one of the reasons he may leave the Texans is because of that ego. And when he first got here, this isn't anything that's changed. When he first got here, I said if Bill O'Brien fails as the head coach with the Houston Texans, it'll be because of ego. It won't be X's and O's. It won't be for any other reason. He needs to check his ego and play to Brock's strength, even if that means to implement more of what Kubiak did with him. Get him out the pocket, get him on the run, get him to where he's comfortable, because we've seen he's never been comfortable just standing in the pocket and going through the progressions.
Great point.
So whatever you have to do, you have to get Osweiler comfortable and play to his strengths in this game, and maybe you surprise the Patriots. And again, I can't go out and pick the Texans to win this game, but I think it will be more competitive than what Vegas and most of the bettors are believing right now.
Yeah, that's a good point that you raised, Jason. When I think of Brock Osweiler and when he has success, it's when he's rolling out and he's on the run and it buys a little time because the guy's got a cannon. But you're right. When you want him to stand in the pocket and dissect things and just drop back and throw, it doesn't end well for him. And, you know, it's a good call on your behalf that O'Brien should, you know, instead of forcing... You know, Marone used to do that with the Bills. He tried to sort of force things in as opposed to you got to coach the ability of your players. You know, otherwise, and that's why O'Brien keeps on going through so many players all the time. And I keep on seeing the national media talking about O'Brien, you know, even with that win, potentially still leaving and other teams actually being interested in him as well. So let's talk about tonight's game then, Jason. National championship game. We've got a rematch. I don't know if this scares you, but our boy Drew, he loves Clemson. He's getting worried because everybody's picking Clemson on the show. We've been talking about this game for like a week now, and we only have one guest that says Alabama kills him. Everybody likes Clemson plus the points, including myself. What do you think?
That always will tend to scare you, especially as a Clemson fan. You're not used to people actually, first off, knowing who you are, and second off, actually supporting you to be competitive against the top teams. I'm 38 years old, and the last time Clemson won a national championship was 1981. And I was born in 78. I was yet to turn 3 years old the last time Clemson won a national championship. So, you've had this built-in mentality where, as Clemson fans, you would just be happy to make it to the national championship. What's working for Clemson, I believe, in that building and for that team is a couple different things. One is that oh, shucks, we're just happy to be here. That got knocked off last year. Now you're going back to win. You've been there. You've had a quarterback that's played in these big games. And then you look at other things that's kind of stacking against Alabama in this game. Yeah, they have the experience as a team and a coaching staff being there. But the quarterback position is always going to be the most important position. You have an 18-year-old true freshman quarterback on the biggest stage who's got all the pressure in the world on him. Where Clemson's not expected to win national championships, that's all you're expected to do at Alabama. And if you fall short of that, you had an unsuccessful season. What Alabama struggled with in the past, Johnny Manziel, these dual-threat quarterbacks, well, you got a guy in Deshaun Watson that they've kept in the pocket for most of the year, haven't risked his injuries and running him. Well, now you're going to open up the whole playbook for him. So I think Clemson does win it. Yeah, seeing everybody so rosy with Clemson on this game, that's just probably more of an unusual feeling than something I'm not comfortable with. But that being said, I think Clemson wins this game.
And you told us last week, too, I didn't realize it, but Jalen's actually from the Houston area as well.
Yeah, Channelview.
Yeah, and like you said, like he's been a good game manager this year, but suddenly without Kiffin, Kiffin's been his quarterback coach. I don't think enough people realize the importance of this. Suddenly he's sort of on his own. You know what I mean? Like it's like, yeah, Sarkisian's there. He knows him, but it's just different. And to me, the key is if Clemson can come out strong. They come out strong, they got to do the same thing they did to Ohio State and make the quarterback beat them. JT Barrett, I think JT Barrett's better than Jalen Hurts is at this stage of their careers as well. They can put Alabama in a bad spot if they get up by a couple of points early and force Bama to throw the football.
Yeah, you remember that game last year. Bama took advantage when one of Clemson's top corner, who's now play for the Minnesota Vikings, Mackenzie Alexander, went out of the game with an injury. Then there were some holes in the defense. They wasn't really able to plug the void of Mackenzie Alexander leaving. And we saw later guys that came in to replace him. They didn't have the same chemistry with each other. And there was a void. And O.J. Howard, the tight end for Alabama, very talented, took advantage of that. And that opened some things up. I think Clemson's better prepared for this stage. Alabama's always been at that level, but it's going to come down to that quarterback position, and there's nobody I'd rather have in the country at the college level than Deshaun Watson under center on the biggest stage. He's already proved it's not too big of a moment for him. So I do think Clemson wins it. I think it will be a competitive, hard-fought game, but again, I think it's finally time. It's been 3.5 decades. If not now, then I might just go back into a cave somewhere.
Always a pleasure, Jason. We got to get out of here. Enjoy the game.
Absolutely. Take care.
Jason Braddock with us. We'll come back with our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. It's the national championship this evening, so let's get right down to business. We're taking the Clemson Tigers, plus 6.5 points. We're taking Clemson on the money line. That's right. Revenge. Vendetta. Clemson gets it done. The game creeps over 51. A couple of props for you. Deshaun Watson, over 23.5 completions and over 4 sacks. The difference is going to be Jalen Hurts. And the passing attack will not be able to keep up with the Clemson offense. May the winners be yours.